The New Islamic Call. Episode 2. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful, we begin the second episode of our series of talks on the revivification of Islam. Our effort to revive Islam is in no way an interpretative judgment. It is not an instance, as other familiar practices we have seen, of an interpretive judgment where no literal text exists. Yet, it is also not an instance of an interpretive judgment where a literal text exists. It is a new understanding of the existing familiar texts. It is not an interpretive judgment because the interpretive judgment is eisegesis. It is in fact, an effuse knowledge thanks to God and thanks to spiritual aspiration and the beseeching by the prophetic means to gain access to the Quran. Access to the Quran is via the Prophet's life. One who knows well how to beseech by the Prophet's life will be granted access to the Quran by the grace of God, and by virtue of this effort and the blessings of the Prophet. So, our effort is not an interpretative judgment, rather it is an understanding of the texts. The rule is that not a single text, in the Quran or in the Hadith, is an end in itself. Texts are means. And all of the means lead to the human. Humans are the most honored, of all creations. Apostles were not sent, the Quran was not revealed, and codes were not enacted, except for the sake of the human being. On this basis rests our call to the second message of Islam. We were, in our opening episode of this series of talks, talking about the path and the code. We tried, by scrutiny and elaboration, to show the difference between the path and the code. We said at the end of the first episode that the second message of Islam is nothing but the path of the Prophet. There we tried to make it clear that there were two practiced codes, the prophetic code and the apostolic code. No one except the Prophet practiced or was obligated to follow the prophetic code, although it was recommended to the ordinary practitioners. The ordinary practitioners were not obliged to practice the prophetic code, were not obligated to the path, simply for fear of hardship on them as ordinary people. The people were not capable of the path. Also, we talked about the issue of money because it shows the enormous difference between the obligation of the ordinary practitioners and the obligation of the Prophet. The people would have suffered considerable hardship if they had been obliged, monetarily, beyond their capability. In fact, it is known that the sole reason behind the famous apostasy of the Bedouin Muslims, after the death of the Prophet, was money, even though the money with which they were obliged was at the level of alms tax. They said, "We swear to God that we are Muslims. Bear witness that there is no deity but God and that Muhammad is the apostle of God, pray, fast, and go on pilgrimage, but we do not give our money. By God, this is exactly the tribute." It is for this reason they apostatized from Islam. That was the result, even though the level of obligation was within the capacity of the ordinary practitioners, so how about if the obligation was at the level of the Prophet's capacity? This is not something that comes to mind or falls in line with true wisdom. The wisdom rests on the verse, "God takes not a soul beyond its capacity." And it also rests on the hadith, "We, the prophets, are commanded to address people according to their level of intellect." It is known that the prophet's level was far higher than the level of other superiors in his nation, much higher than Abu Bakr, not to mention the ordinary person of his nation. Once, the companions of the Prophet wanted to practice the unbroken fast, a type of fasting known as incessant fast. The Prophet chose to practice the incessant fast. He would fast throughout the day and continue to fast into the night, and fast the following day and continue fasting that night, and fast the third day and finally break the fast at the end of the day. 3 days and 2 nights of unbroken fasting. Some of the companions thought of imitating the Prophet in this matter, but he said to them, "You should follow the approved fast and break the fast at sunset. Do not fast continuously." Yet they said to him, but we see you fasting continuously, O God's apostle. Then he said, I am not like any of you, I am given food and drink during my sleep by my Lord. It is obvious that the food and drink that the prophet used to get from his Lord was the certitude in God and not milk or water, and not bread or meat. He eats the fruit of the profoundest knowledge of God. So, this big difference between the prophet and the ordinary practitioners supports the existence of two practiced codes. One code prescribed for the prophet, and a much lower code prescribed for the ordinary practitioners. We have pointed out to a very great danger that when people see us aspiring to the great perfections of the prophet, to which they believe we are not entitled, it is not our religious duty. That is of course what the theologians say a lot to us. They say, this matter is the prophet's specialty. It is not our religious duty. Yet we have warned that this is a great danger that holds back the ordinary practitioners from pursuing the heights of their prophet, and discourages their determination to advance. In fact, we are obliged, as we are able, to strive toward all of the prophetic perfections. We are obliged to get acquainted with God. That is because religion exists only to get us acquainted with God, so we can advance toward God. There are no advancements in this realm except in our understanding, and our acquaintance and adornment with the ethics of God. Approaching God is the process of bringing our characters closer to God's attributes. God has no place where we approach Him, He is neither in place nor in time. Verily, God is in our hearts. The veils of ignorance, illusions, and inattention, with which life has encircled us, separate us from Him. No, but that which they have earned is oval in their hearts. Approaching God is possible by lifting the veils of ignorance between Him and us, lifting the veils of bad habits, those hostilities, hatreds, resentments, envy, and aversions, in the daily matters that we have been drawn into by our concerns of livelihood, and the fears associated with that livelihood. No, but that which they have earned is oval in their hearts. So, the adornment with His ethics is the matter. It is enjoined upon us to adorn ourselves with the ethics of God. Therefore, saying that, it is not enjoined upon us to strive for the heights of the prophet or this matter is the prophet's specialty, is a great and harmful error. The matter enjoined upon us is to be divine. God said, be divine for you have taught the scripture and you have studied it earnestly. A saying of the prophet goes, adorn yourselves with the ethics of God. Verily, it is my Lord that is on a straight path. The matter enjoined upon us is significant. As I say, it is an error when the theologians say that this matter is the prophet's specialty. It is not our religious duty. Yet, it is not our religious duty when he falls short of it, and that is for the sake of warding off discomfort. But eventually, this matter is our religious duty. It is our religious duty whenever we are capable of it. The Quran, as I said, enjoins it upon us with a command, say, O Muhammad, if you do love God, follow me, God will love you. As our spiritual aspirations became too weak to undertake this matter, we slackened to following Muhammad in his outer acts. We are now in bodily movements praying as the Prophet used to pray. But is this the act required to be followed? Or is this a rind around the inner fruit? Yes. We must pray as Muhammad used to pray, in his acts and guises, but we must have the inner preparedness that makes our hearts similar to his heart. What is enjoined, in fact, is to follow him both outwardly and inwardly. And the rind that we undertake must be filled with pith. I mean that our acts must have inner substance. The second message of Islam, as we have said, is nothing but the path. It is the path of the Prophet, returning again to be the code for the whole nation. The reason is that the ordinary practitioners in the 7th century were incapable of understanding what the Prophet said, or undertaking his acts. Therefore, his acts were condescended to their level. The hadith, which was mentioned earlier, stated, we the Prophets, are commanded to address people according to their level of intellect. Hence the descending from the prophetic code to the apostleship code took place. We gave the example of the teacher, who prepared at the College of Education, to show us how the prophet was superbly prepared to bear the burden of the message. He had the ability to simplify the great verities, so that people could understand them and function to the degree to which they were capable. God takes not a soul beyond its capacity. When the hadith of the revivification of Islam arrived, the good news succeeded the bad news of Islam's disappearance and death in the hearts of men and women. The good news was brought forth saying, Islam began as something strange and will revert to being strange as it began, so good tidings for the strangers. It was asked, Who are those strangers, O Apostle of God? He replied, Those who revive my path when it is effaced. In fact, the Prophet announced the coming of the nation of the strange ones. The foreigners in the nation of the strange ones are strangers. But soon, when there are many of their kind, their estrangement will come to an end and they will be living among their own ilk of people. But they as the foreigners, are indeed strangers. One may ask, Where did the strange one's attribute of estrangement come from? What exactly is this estrangement? The answer is that the estrangement comes from monotheism. Basically, monotheism is strange to the mind. Minds exist in a milieu of multiplicity, in the milieu of the material world. The doorways to the material world are numerous, they are the senses. And the senses render multiplicity. The milieu in which the mind exists, is this multiplicity. While the mind perceives by binarity at its most primitive phase, the milieu, in which the minds exist, provides the multiplicity. When invited to monotheism, minds find the lack of multiplicity strange. And that is narrated in the Quran. One day, when the Quraishites were in the presence of their 360 idols around the Kaaba, the Prophet came up to them saying, O people, say, there is no deity but God. You will be successful. With their 360 idols, they found that strange. The Quran gave an account of their wonderment. They said, Has he made the deities one God? Indeed, this is a wondrous thing. It is a wondrous thing, something strange. So, when the Prophet came upon them with monotheism, he became a stranger among them, just as the strange ones will become strangers in the community in which they live in the latter days, as the Prophet foretold. They are the ones who revive Islam after it has gone out of the life of the people. They will be strangers because they will come up with monotheism. The hadith of the strangers is of great importance for the revivification of Islam. Islam will not be revived by the code, as many people think. Nowadays, many people think that we are doing as well as we could possibly wish. We bear witness that there is no deity but God, and that Muhammad is the apostle of God. We pray, fast, pay alms, and go on our pilgrimages. It seems there is nothing missing but to enforce the code. They think if they were given a free hand, if they had been in power, they would have restored the code. But this is a very faulty understanding of religion. Religion will not be revived by the code. Religion will be revived by monotheism, yet the revivification is not an act of a community, except in the light of the fact that the community is composed of individuals. This is because the values derived from Gnosis fall within the individual's domain. If we, at the present time, attempted to implement the code, we would distort it. We would implement it far from its reality. We see this every day. Nowadays, the countries that implement Islamic code are in a very evident paradox with the actual religion. And they are even more in a paradox than the other countries, that they think they are doing as well as one could possibly wish, since they are following the religion. This code, however, is implemented in an extreme vacuum. In a sense, it is carried out on the doorkeeper, and never on the executive, carried out on the weak, while the well-to-do are saved from it. Why? That is because the minds of those implementing it are corrupted. Their minds are neither mannered nor disciplined. Therefore, it is impossible to implement the code fairly, earnestly, impartially, and with integrity. Monotheism, though, is an address and a code to human souls. If you want to establish the Islamic government on earth, you should first establish it within yourself. If you have managed to establish the Islamic government within yourself, you are about to establish it on earth. But you cannot establish such a government within yourself, unless you have established it on the basis of monotheism. That is because the standard for codes within the human soul is monotheism. So, the source of estrangement is monotheism. Islam began as something strange and will revert to being strange as it began. So good tidings for the strangers. The strangers are those who, with the aid of estrangement, manifest their strong cognizance of the gradations of monotheism that are foreign to most people. Whenever the mast of monotheism rises to a new elevation, things come to be viewed in a new light. Even the texts, which were perceived by people in some manner, can be perceived with a new perception when the mast of monotheism rises to a new elevation. This is what we, the advocates of Islamic resurgence, are calling for today. We are focusing on monotheism, which grants us a new understanding of the Quran, based on which we interpret the texts. Earlier, we have said that the interpretation of the Quran, however great, is not the Quran. Rather, it is the interpreter's own understanding of the Quran. And the interpreter's understanding of the Quran depends on many things, including the literacy of the particular time. You cannot expect the interpreters of the early centuries to serve the purposes of all subsequent ages, in elucidating the Quran. They understood from the Quran that which served their purpose and time. We need to understand from the Quran that which serves the purpose of our time. Our time right now is different from all other times. In fact, humanity, in its distant past, was progressing toward a time like our time. Humanity was moving by the force of their strenuous efforts from one phase to another, in every time and place on this planet, to be in a situation similar to the situation of our present society. They long to live as we do, in a unified global society in which members conceive of matters in conformity with each other, where they face the same destiny, and also make every conceivable effort to live in peace and cooperation with their neighbors. Humanity's progression proceeded and arrived at our current situation. We are now living in a global society, in which modern means of transportation have abridged the distance between the regions where people become neighbors. The situation in the past was very different from the present situation. For example, the problems of the people who used to travel by pack animals, by camels, cannot be considered similar to the problems of today's people who travel by spaceships and airplanes, who travel to the moon and explore the planets in space. Even now as we speak, there are spaceships traveling to Jupiter and to Saturn. These spaceships are expected to continue their journey through the remainder of 1977 and proceed through the year 1978 to reach Saturn in mid-1979. It is not possible, not by reason or religion, to solve the problems of such a society on the basis of the understanding of ancient Muslims of the 7th century. Even though the interpretation of the Quran was received from the Prophet, this does not mean it is the final word in the interpretation of the Quran, because the Prophet, as we said in the first episode, interprets according to the people's level of intellect. People were incapable of grasping the Prophet's understanding of the Quran, and for that reason he did not address his understanding to them. He addressed them according to their level of intellect. Furthermore, even the Prophet's understanding of the Quran is not the entire Quran. We have mentioned the hadith in which the Prophet says, "Had you relied on God with due reliance, He would have provided you with sustenance, as he provides it to birds, and you would have learned the knowledge which eliminates ignorance. Still no one has learned that. They asked, "Neither you?" He said, "Neither I." They said, "We did not think that prophets fall short of anything." He said, "Indeed God's knowledge is of greater significance than to be fully comprehended by anyone. No one grasps the knowledge of the Quran but God." The Quran alludes to this in an address to the Prophet, "Do not move your tongue with the Quran, in order to make haste with it. Surely upon us are its collection and its recitation. And when we read it, follow you its reading. Then indeed upon us is its clarification." And also this has been alluded to in the Quran regarding the Prophet, "And hasten not, O Muhammad, with the Quran before its revelation has been completed, and say, My Lord, enrich me in knowledge." The Prophet's knowledge of the Quran was increasing through worship and through spiritual aspiration. And the Prophet is still, in his life on the Isthmus, scaling the heights in understanding the Quran. No person will have comprehensive knowledge of the Quran, because the Quran is God's essence and his eternal attribute. In the final analysis, the Quran is God's essence. Therefore, as far as we are concerned, the ever so worthy ancestors' understanding of the Quran is not binding. These worthy ancestors did their very best in understanding from the Quran that which served the purposes of their society. We have to understand from the Quran that which helps us solve the problems of our society. It is a society that differs from past societies in all aspects. It not only differs from the society of the 7th century, the truth is that it is different from the society of 30 years ago. Every day there are new developments that turn this society into a new society and require a new understanding of the Quran to solve society's problems. There is no solution that is not included in the Quran. Seeking a solution, however, should be done with the right means, which is the being of the Prophet. We say that the Prophet's life is the access to the Quran. This is what Honorable Aisha meant with her saying about the Prophet, his ethics were the Quran. So, if we follow the example of the Prophet's ethics with imitation, replication, love, and trust, if we follow him in his acts with open minds and pursue the heights of his progression toward his Lord, then we will be granted access to the Quran, and then we will have a new understanding. What is needed now then, is the revivification of the path. The essence of path is the mastering of monotheism. As we said, the Prophet's level of obligation was indeed higher than the level of the ordinary practitioners, because he mastered monotheism at a level higher than the level of the ordinary practitioners. When he said, "I am given food and drink during my sleep by my Lord," we maintained that the food and drink that the Prophet received from his Lord was not milk or water, nor was it bread or meat, rather it was the certitude in God that resulted from his mastering of monotheism. Islam will return if we revive the path. The essence of path, as we have said, is there is no deity but God. The one who masters there is no deity but God will emerge as a stranger among the people. This one will be strange to them because of the different lifestyle and different discourse. This one will be strange among them. Strangers will increase and grow in numbers until God allows their estrangement to disappear and they will live with their ilk of people. The society will turn into that small group that the strangers belong to, before they became larger in number. The new understanding of the Quran in fact offers a highly accurate and nuanced distinction of the line of balance. An example of this line of balance has been alluded to in the Quran, "And thus we have made you an intermediate nation." The line of balance occurs between two extremes as we can see, "And thus we have made you an intermediate nation to be witnesses over mankind, and the apostle to be a witness over you." In our finest chapter in the Quran, chapter 1, we read, "Guide us to the straight path. The path of those upon whom you have bestowed favor, not of those who have evoked your anger, or of those who are astray." God called the path of those upon whom he has bestowed favor, the straight path, that is the line of balance, which is the line between the two extremes. On one extreme is excessiveness and on the other is negligence. Or you can say, on one extreme is materiality and on the other is spirituality, excessiveness in materiality and excessiveness in spirituality. Or, rather, we could say the two extremes are excessiveness in spirituality on the one hand, and on the other extreme, negligence with regard to spirituality. As if there is a material extreme and a spiritual extreme. Both are wrong. In the interpreter's view, the two extremes are Jews and Christians. Those who have evoked God's anger are the Jews and those who are astray the Christians. This view is generally agreed upon between the interpreters. And then, guide us to the straight path. The path of those upon whom you have bestowed favor, the Muslims, because this is what is asserted in the verse, "This day I have perfected for you your religion and completed my favor upon you." This reference to the Muslims upon whom you have bestowed favor, is also expressed in, "And thus we have made you an intermediate nation to be witnesses over mankind." The intermediate is between the Jews and the Christians. Here, the interpretation of the verse goes like this: the path of those upon whom you have bestowed favor, the Muslims, not of those who have evoked your anger, the Jews, or of those who are astray, the Christians. On the line of balance is the Muslim nation. The Muslim nation has the qualities of the Jews and of the Christians. For example, we are of course required to believe in the Torah and in the Gospel. We believe in Moses and in Jesus. On this part, we believe as if we are followers at the level of recognizing the prophethood and apostleship of Moses and of Jesus, as if we are followers. We are Muslims, we are Christians, and we are Jews. We belong to all of that. Our book dominates their books. We recognize their stature and their high repute with God, and we believe in them. The Muslim nation, the intermediate between the two extremes, also has the qualities of the two extremes. As in all such cases, every intermediate has the qualities of the two extremes, like the child springing from both the mother and the father. Through mating together, the mother and father give birth to the child and in the child they both meet. The child has the qualities of both parents. Here, as well, in every intermediate, are the qualities of the two extremes. On the surface we see that the child is a single person, but if we look deeply, we will find that different qualities of both of the mother and father are present in the child. You may say that the child is composed of soul and spirit. The soul is closer to the mother while the spirit is closer to the father, but we see the child as a single person. Yet when you look deeply, the child is not a single person. Likewise, the things that converge in the middle are in fact binary. This binarism can only be distinguished if we rise on the column of monotheism, to the power of light by which we, as the Sufis say, can split the hair. This power, by which the hair splits, is the criterion that has been alluded to in the Quran, O believers! If you be pious to God, He will grant you a criterion. The criterion is the light by which you distinguish between the nuances. The hadith, also, alluded to this triplet among the two extremes: that which is lawful is clear and that which is unlawful is clear. These are the two extremes, and between the two are abstruse matters, about which many people do not know. Thus, the one who avoids abstruse matters is cleared in regard to religion and honor. Furthermore, between the two extremes are abstruse matters, about which many people do not know, because the matters in the middle are obscured. That which is lawful is clear and that which is unlawful is clear, but in the middle there is something that converges between the extremes, making it very difficult to distinguish between the lawful and the unlawful. We can only do so by the help of certain insights, thanks to God and thanks to piety. This is why the Prophet says, about which many people do not know. We learned from the above that every intermediate between two extremes combines the qualities of those two extremes, which is true. It is an axiomatic truth, which is evident in the case of the child who contains the qualities of both mother and father. From this we can deduce that we, the Muslims, believe in the Torah and also believe in the Gospel. We confirm that which was revealed to Moses and that which was revealed to Jesus. This intermediacy is the same as when we are called to be witnesses over mankind. The meaning of, "And thus we have made you an intermediate nation to be witnesses over mankind, and the apostle to be a witness over you," is that in you, Muslims, the nations meet. The two extremes meet in you, the intermediate, so you will be witnesses over mankind. You further meet in the apostle. Your aggregation is in him. And he is a witness over you. In this sense, all the matters in the middle or on the line of demarcation are binary. As a matter of fact, the meanings of the Quran are binary. This is what is asserted in the verse, "God has given us the better words," a twofold synonymous scripture. "It chills the skins of those who fear their Lord, so that their skins and their hearts soften to the remembrance of God." Such is God's guidance. He guides whom he wills. And for the one whom God sends astray there is no guide. Binarism has been alluded to in this verse, simultaneously, in the twofold and also in "so that their skins and their hearts soften." Here, the word twofold means consisting of binary meanings. In this sense the Quran is twofold. It consists of binary meanings because these are words from the Lord to his servant. These are meanings from the Lord in his lofty height tailored to suit the servant on earth. Also the Quran emphatically declares the twofold, Hameen. The Arabic letters H and M. "I swear by the book that makes things clear, surely we have made it a Quran in Arabic that you may understand. And surely it, this Quran, in the mother of the book is with us, is truly elevated, full of wisdom." The Quran in the mother of the book, which is with the Eternal Being, has been made an Arabic Quran, that we may understand. Hence the phrase, "Surely we have made it a Quran in Arabic." This Arabic Quran is what has descended to the servant on earth. And then we are referred to that Quran, at the source, with the Eternal Being, to that which is the God's essence, and surely it, in the mother of the book is with us, is truly elevated, full of wisdom. And so binarism has been asserted explicitly. If the matter is so, then all of our conceptions need to be reviewed. Earlier, in our first episode, we said that the code is something other than the path, as if we have both a code and a path. Yet the difference between them is so fine that to differentiate them requires insight that has to be acquired through worship and piety, O believers. If you are pious to God, he will grant you a criterion. Piety means we work on obeying commands and avoiding what is forbidden, pursuant to the teachings of the code. This is what is asserted in the verse, "And be pious to God, and God teaches you." This is the access to gnosis. Piety is understood as the access to gnosis, in the verse, "And be pious to God, and God teaches you." Gnosis is also alluded to in the prophetic hadith, "Who acts on what he learned will be granted by God such a knowledge which was unknown to him before." Who acts, in worship, on what he learned, from the code, will be granted by God, an access to the truth, such a knowledge that was not known to him before. And in another related hadith, "Verily, I am but a conveyor, and God is the provider. Whoever God desires worthy will be endowed with comprehension of the religion. And this nation will never cease to live the command of God. It will not be harmed by those who oppose them until the day of God arrives." That is verily, "I am but a conveyor," which means, I was sent with the teachings of the code, which are necessary for worship and piety. Verily, I am but a conveyor, I teach the code. I was sent with the teachings of the code, without which no performance in worship is valid, and God grants the access to the truth. The issue of twofoldness or binarism with regards to the accuracy of meanings is the subject of our call today. We do not call for new texts, rather the mainstay of our work is the Quran that is already in the hands of people, the Quran between the covers of the Holy Book. There is nothing new except a new understanding that God bestows on whom He wills, thanks to His sheer grace, and thanks to the exposure to His grace through the Prophet's path. Path and code can be considered twofold. There are similarities between them, as well as differences. The path is an upgraded code. The path is a confirmed code. The fact is that if you wish to comprehend these abstruse meanings, you will find that Islam, for example, is of two kinds, Islam at the starting point and Islam at the terminal point. Islam at the starting point is less than faith, while Islam at the terminal point is greater than faith. One could say that faith is in the middle, beneath it there is Islam at the starting point, and above faith there is Islam at the terminal point. When the Bedouins said, "We have faith," as recounted in the Quran, they were not given approval for this claim. The Quran refers to this expressly, "The Bedouins said, we have faith." Say, unto them, "O Muhammad, you have no faith," but rather you should say, "We converted to Islam, for faith has not yet entered into your hearts." The claim of faith was denied to them. They were demoted to the conversion to Islam level, because Islam, at this level, is just a superficial submission, semblance of word and deed. Yet, in this concern, a person may say, "I bear witness that there is no deity but God, and I bear witness that Muhammad is the apostle of God." Acknowledging the apostleship of Muhammad entails the following of Muhammad. Muhammad said, "Islam is based on five pillars, testifying that there is no deity but God and Muhammad is his apostle, performing the prayers, paying alms, fasting Ramadan and pilgrimage to the house for whoever can afford it." The convert, who has given testimony and established the pillars of Islam, is outwardly considered by people a Muslim, albeit a hypocrite. With the teachings of God, the Prophet was indeed aware that so-and-so was a hypocrite. The Prophet was aware of the hypocrites, but he was not ordered to tell them, "You are not Muslims." This is what is asserted in his hadith, "I have been ordered to fight against the people until they testify that there is no deity but God and that Muhammad is the apostle of God, establish the prayer, pay the alms, fast Ramadan and go on pilgrimage to the house. And if they do that then they will gain protection from me for their lives and property, unless they violate the code, then their reckoning will be with God." The phrase "their reckoning will be with God" means that the Prophet was ordered neither to look into their hearts nor to proclaim what in their hearts was hypocrisy or honesty. The hypocrite is at the level of Islam known as superficial submission, yet the hypocrite is still considered to be a Muslim. This superficial submission is known as the Islam that spares blood from shedding and protects properties from capture. Beyond this level, the heart of the sincere person who genuinely observes the covenant of the initial Islam, by physically and mentally obeying, would maintain a perceived status known as faith. This perceived status would be subsequent to the superficial Islam, the superficial submission. The person, whose heart maintains an inward sense known as faith, would be considered a believer. Faith is outward and inward submission. The state of superficial submission, semblance of word and deed, has been defined as Islam. And the state of outward and inward submission has been defined as faith, which is semblance of word and deed, and credence with the heart. If a person sincerely proceeds, faith increases. The internal sense increases. It is perhaps more accurate to use the word precision, which was mentioned in the prophetic hadith, to express this stage. So, precision comes after faith. The famous hadith of Gabriel that was narrated by Umar ibn Khattab, said, "Whilst we were sitting with the Apostle of God, there appeared before us a man whose hair was exceedingly black and whose clothes were exceedingly white, No signs of journey were to be seen on him, and none of us knew him. He sat down in front of the apostle of God, may the blessings and peace of God be upon him, with his knees touching against the prophet's. Placing the palms of his hands on his thighs, he said, O Muhammad, tell me about Islam. The prophet said, Islam is to testify that there is no deity but God and Muhammad is the apostle of God, to perform prayers, to give alms, to fast Ramadan, and to make the pilgrimage to the house if you are able to do so. The man said, You have spoken rightly, and we were amazed at him asking him and then saying that he had spoken rightly. Then the man said, Tell me about faith. The prophet said, It is to believe in God, His angels, His books, His apostles, and the last day, and to believe in divine destiny, both the good and the evil of it. The man said, You have spoken rightly. The man said, Then tell me about precision. The prophet said, It is to worship God as though you see Him and if you do not see Him, then, know that, truly He sees you. At this point Gabriel stopped asking about the definitions of Islam, faith, and precision and went on to ask about the hour. The man said, Then tell me about the hour, which means when is the hour? The prophet said, The one questioned about it knows no better than the questioner. The man said, Then tell me about its signs. The prophet said, That the slave girl will give birth to her mistress, and that you will see barefooted, naked destitute shepherds competing in constructing lofty buildings. Then the man left after he said, You have spoken rightly. Then the prophet said, O Ammar, do you know who the questioner was? I said, God and his apostle know best. The prophet said, It was Gabriel, who came to teach you your religion. This hadith presents in order the definitions of Islam, faith, and precision, which are different heights in a flight of stairs. It seems that there is a great deal of bewilderment in the minds of many people concerning this hadith. The fact is the matter of accuracy in distinguishing its meaning happens to be very simple. Meanings do not appear to them as twofold, rather they appear as singles. In people's view Islam has a single meaning. Also, people think that faith is higher than Islam, because of how they regard a person as Muslim, which is, as we have said, a matter of superficial submission that only when increased becomes faith. Of course this is a true view and is correct on this level. But, there is also an Islam that is higher than faith. This is what we mean by saying that Islam is of two kinds. Here, in one place our Lord acknowledged the conversion to Islam by the Bedouins, even though lower than the level of faith, while in another place he says, the Bedouins are the worst in disbelief and hypocrisy, and most fitted to be in ignorance of the bounds of what God has revealed. God did not let them persist in their claim on faith, but demoted them to Islam. Clearly this level of Islam cannot be the level, about which our Lord says, Indeed, the true religion in the sight of God is Islam, complete submission to God. The Islam of the Bedouin cannot be what Abraham was asked to embrace, as his Lord said to him, Submit. He said, I have submitted to the Lord of the worlds. After many trials, our Lord asked Abraham to submit, so he said, I have submitted to the Lord of the worlds. Our Lord further claims, and whoever desires other than Islam is religion, that, religion, shall not be accepted, and in the hereafter this one shall be among the losers. God also says about this level of Islam, O believers, be pious to God with His true piety and do not die except as Muslims. So, after faith was approved for them by God, and after they were called the believers, O believers, and after He approved that they are believers, they were recommended by Him to embrace Islam. Remember He said, Be pious to God with His true piety and do not die except as Muslims. And we have defined piety and said that God's true piety is one of the most significant and complex things, which can never be fully attained. The more the servant or the Gnostic is pious to God from one aspect, the more ignorant of God shall that servant be from another aspect. Being biased to God with his true piety can never happen. It is only from God to God, because it requires knowing God truly. And no one, truly, knows God but God himself. Those for whom faith was approved were called believers, O believers! God recommended them to Islam. This level of Islam cannot be the Islam of the Bedouins, to which they were demoted after claiming faith. God denied them that faith. The Bedouins said, "We have faith." Say, unto them, O Muhammad, you have no faith, but rather you say, "We converted to Islam, for faith has not yet entered into your hearts." Hence, above faith there is Islam. The convert scales the stages of Islam, from the superficial submission to faith, to precision, and then ascends the stages of certitude to become a fully certain post-believer. Certitude is a threefold set of stages, as was faith, which is also a threefold stage. The stages of faith are superficial Islam, faith, and precision. The stages of certitude are certain knowledge, substantive certain knowledge, and true certain knowledge. These are three stages of certitude are alluded to in the Quran, while they were not mentioned in the Hadith of Gabriel. This is because Gabriel came to teach the nation of believers their religion. The Prophet's phrase, "It was Gabriel who came to teach you your religion," is an address to the nation of believers. Our scholars, the theologians, did not understand this, because they also think that there is a single nation. This leads us back to the twofoldness, which we call binarity. They think that there is a single nation, the nation of believers, but in fact, there is a nation of Muslims too. The nation of Muslims has not come until this day. Rather, what has come are its forerunners, the appearance of the prophets and the apostles. They are all Muslims. Their nations believe in them, but they are Muslims. They are individuals, while the Muslims as a nation have not entered history yet. As a matter of fact, the sublime purpose of the Islamic call is to give birth to the Muslim nation, the counterpart of the nation of believers. So, Gabriel came to teach the nation of believers, while the Quran came at the time of the nation of believers to transform it into a Muslim nation in the end. This is what it is meant with as the phrase, "The earth will be filled with justice, just as it was filled with injustice." The two stages of Islam are the initial stage, and the final stage, which will be topped by a second Islam. After conversion to Islam, the superficial submission develops into faith. It develops into outward and inward submission by its settling into the heart. Then this faith develops into precision. This is the threefold set of stages of the nation of believers, which will ultimately move toward the other threefold set of stages. The precision develops into certain knowledge. Then the certain knowledge develops into substantive certain knowledge. And then substantive certain knowledge develops into true certain knowledge. When the stage of certitude is completed, it is crowned with Islam, which is complete outward and inward submission, as his Lord said to him, "Submit." He, Abraham, said, "I have submitted to the Lord of the worlds." In fact, Abraham came to this stage of submission after he was questioned about faith, and was found to be in the fullest faith, leading to certitude, and when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you give life to the dead," he replied, "Have you no faith?" He, Abraham, said, "Oh yes. But just to reassure my heart answering, have you no faith?" Abraham said, "Oh yes." Abraham fulfilled faith, but he was asking for more than faith. He was asking for reassurance, and when Abraham said, "My Lord, show me how you give life to the dead," the Lord replied, "Have you no faith?" He, Abraham, said, "Oh yes. I have faith, but I am asking for more than faith, just to reassure my heart." As if Abraham said, "I am asking for certitude." And this is what is asserted in the Quran, And thus we show Abraham the kingdom of the heavens and the earth, that he may be of the ones of constant certitude. God did not say, that he may be of the believers. Rather he said, that he may be of the ones of constant certitude. Then the Quran goes on to say, as his Lord said to him, submit. He, Abraham, said, I have submitted to the Lord of the worlds. This is the second Islam. This cannot be the Islam of the Bedouins. Abraham arrived at this level of submission after all these trials, after being tested by his Lord, and as Abraham was tried by his Lord with certain commands, which he fulfilled, the Lord said, I have appointed you a leader for mankind. The phrase, and as Abraham was tried by his Lord with certain commands, which he fulfilled, indicates the many trials he was subjected to during his observance and practices. Abraham was scaling the stages from uncertainty to certainty, from faith to certitude. Then once he ascertained, he was asked to submit, as his Lord said to him, submit. He said, I have submitted to the Lord of the worlds. So, it is very clear that there are two kinds of Islam. It has become clear to us that the path and code are two things that differ in degree, and that the path is much higher and more accurate and greater in its obligation than the code, because it is based on a knowledge that is greater than that by which the code addresses the ordinary practitioners. And now it is quite clear to us that Islam itself is of two kinds. In fact, the binarity embraces the entire Quran. All the meanings are binary, a meaning close to the servant, and a higher grand meaning with the Lord. The two meanings may be expressed in one word, or two words, but people think of them having a single meaning. As touched upon now, the word Islam refers to two different meanings. People think of Islam as one thing, and that faith is greater than it. We want to draw the attention to the fact that Islam is of two kinds, an Islam below faith, and another Islam above faith. The other point mentioned in the previous episode was about path and code, where people view the path as the code. More than that, as we have said, the code and religion are considered one thing. This matter calls for a more nuanced treatment. Yes, the code is nothing other than the religion. There is no otherness in the sense that code goes eastward while religion goes westward, not at all. The difference, however, is in degree. The code is the religion that has come down to the ground of the ordinary people, to address them according to their level of intellect, and to obligate them according to their capability. The path was at the level of the Prophet, to address him according to his level of intellect, and to obligate him according to his capability. As long as there is a difference between the capability, comprehension, and intellect of the Prophet and the comprehension and capability of the ordinary practitioners, it has become clear that their obligations are also different in stature. The path is more accurate and more precise than the code. These are two meanings where a difference in degree exists between them. Such accurate and precise distinctions lead us to the nuances, which we are calling for now. Indeed, the nuances that we have in mind are our pursuit, the new, more nuanced understanding of the texts. We definitely are in need of nothing other than the Quran. No one is in need of anything other than the Quran, except perhaps a new understanding of the Quran. This new understanding of the texts requires the observance of the path as a personal way of worship, because the life of the Prophet is the access to the Quran. It is as though we are only beginning to revive the path because of our quest to have a new understanding of the Quran. And by reviving the path, the revivification of Islam will take place. In any case, the elaboration on the binarity will be the subject of our next episode. That is because the issue of binarity also requires further clarification. We are really anxious to have this issue elucidated clearly, to have people understand us enough, so as to eliminate the confusion for our call and to stop the deliberate distortion that is occurring in the present time.